Yes, folks, welcome. Holiday postgame.
Holiday postgame, let's do it.
Let's get this show on the road. Let's start with some calls. We got a few. The call number for folks is one of these here, right there. First call of the evening. I'm not even sure whose it is.
What is up? It is your bipolar friend from rural Iowa, Adam. I'll be honest. Probably not going to listen to the show tonight. I just saw the notification, so I felt like giving you guys a call. Sure, the show will be great. I'll probably watch it this weekend with the Sunday show or episode. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. I remember, like, when I first started listening to you guys, you had a conversation about vegetarianism and veganism. And not to brag, I think I got everyone beat. I was vegetarian for, like, 3 years because I was dating a vegan who, like, I just realized after, like, a week of not eating meat, I was like, oh, I don't really need meat. And now, recently, since I've had, like, my rural moving to an acreage thing, I've changed my mind, and now I am fine hunting and eating that. And going to nice places, like very nice restaurants that treat the meat with a lot of respect. I think as long as you respect the animal, kind of like the, like with hunting, I think that gives a lot of respect. And also it's like, come on, that every other way that animal can die is like going to suck dick compared to that. And, yeah, I am, my diet's the best. I'm better than all vegans. And well, actually no, vegans probably do have me beat because they just like are pacifists. So, but they're pretty annoying. All right, I ranted for long enough. Have a good night.
That about hunting for me, I like to intuit because, you know, I've seen that myself. Like this deer, like, you know, would have been eaten by a fucking coyote or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we put it out of its misery with a rifle. I understand that's not persuasive to everybody, though.
Yeah, I mean, we already talked about this, so I don't feel the need to necessarily do a whole philosophy of it. But no, I mean, I think understanding where food comes from is like really important. Somebody who's, you know, had that experience when I was young of understanding that no meat doesn't, not just honey, you know, just like having chickens and things like that and goats and all that. Because anyway, I grew up when I was really young, a little bit outside of Austin on a ranch, but yeah, I don't know. I think that like the way a lot of Americans sort of deal with food and meat in particular is like very alienated. If you get what I mean, that it's just like, it's a pure product that's like wrapped in cellophane when you get it. And no, there's a process behind that. And I think not all, I highly respect vegetarians and vegans for their positions. The only thing I don't respect or get annoyed with is when people think they're the only ones who've thought about it. When it's like, if you grow up with anyone or spend time with anybody who is involved in that process of raising food or hunting or things like that, not everybody, but a lot of people have actually like very interesting and sophisticated ways of viewing that. And I think that like, if you've ever had to, you know, hunt, or if you've ever seen something come from being, you know, an animal that you raised to being something that's on the dinner table, there is that like immediate, you know, shock. Yeah. I would be a little disturbed if you didn't have that first experience, but, I don't know. I think that that's like, I think that's a really important thing that a lot of folks never go through.
I mean, I've had milk that I've seen go through the fucking, hydraulic tubes connected to cow udders in that morning, which is like, still a bit alienated, but you know, it's not like I was like my mom like squeezing the milk out of the udders or whatever. But and then, you know, also butchered chickens and had chicken that same night that I was chased by one with its head cut off.
I don't remember what episode that was on, but if you want to hear Matt, we spent like 20-30 minutes on that question. Actually, that was a think tank a little while ago. But appreciate hearing from you. Yeah, I don't know, like, because remember, like, I had this stalker guy who's really worked up about me because I cook food for my family. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while I posted on Instagram for being a meat pornographer. No, I mean, like, I think respecting that process is something that is, I don't know, I Also, just giving people a heads up, I was just saying to Matt, I actually think I 100% am coming down with COVID-19 right now. So my energy levels have plummeted pretty dramatically. I don't know if I can get into the whole thing, but yeah, sorry.
And we got a call from a number of calls from the same number. We're going to do the latest as I
think it's usually the way to go.
Yeah, it's maybe those. No, okay. Here we go.
Hello, Matthew and David. I'm sorry for my earlier call, the last minute of which, of 30 seconds of which, is, I assume, the hold music, because I took a more important call. But now I've returned to leaving a voice message and will reiterate what I said in the end of what I was going to say. The first of which is that I saw the Avatar movie, which is on track to make $1 billion, which is very exciting because that is the cost of the movie. It has now made its money back and is now going to start making a profit at $1 billion, which is good for Jim Cameron. Great movie, terrible gender politics. The main character, the Aussie actor, spends a lot of time talking about hating man and man has to protect and stuff. And his wife kind of spends a lot of time hissing at Kate Winslet. But it's essentially a three acts. The first act is the military reinvade, paradise. The second act is a nature documentary about whaling. And the third act is kind of Titanic and aliens and, you know, the mechs from Aliens and a little bit of, you know, Titanic all thrown in together. And it's really quite wonderful. I highly recommend going to see what $700 million plus advertising or costs in CGI. It's very beautiful. In other entertainment news, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, our beloved Black Adam, from the movie that Matthew loved, is not going to be in the first phase of the new Marvel universe, the new DC universe, coming from James Gunn. The director of Guardians of the Galaxy and the Suicide Squad, who's now the head honcho of the DC under the change once again in corporate management as a result of the merger with the Discovery Corporation, which you should have Matthew Stoller on to talk about. Anyways, Happy New Year again to David. Let's hear it for his beloved Cowboys and his whatever the other state team that he likes. I can't remember their name. And Matthew, I hope you enjoy doing your drugs over the New Year period. As a youth, as a young person with a master's degree should. Anyways, take care, guys. Bye.
Well, there's a couple of things to go off of there. And also, just letting folks know, I know we have Twitch listeners. If you ask questions in the chat, we're happy to take those. This is more casual hangout session. But, dude, have you seen Avatar?
The new one?
Yeah.
No.
Actually, I knew the answer to that before I asked. Like, getting Matt sometimes out is hard, and I can't imagine Matt's just going to go to see a movie out of curiosity.
You know, I saw the first one in theaters twice.
You really liked the first one?
Well, I enjoyed it, but I was living with film majors at the time. And,
did they love it?
They enjoyed it, I think, a lot. One of them loved it, definitely.
I
thought it was fine. I thought the 3D was cool.
I don't get it, man.
I'm
not like, and it's not even me just being like, oh, I'm, you know, so left or whatever, or like I like high. I don't get it, man. The first one was fine. I saw the second one. The only thing that was awesome about, I thought it was awful. Just saying. I know people really like it, and that's fine. It just was not for me. The funniest thing about the movie, I won't spoil on nothing for nobody, but I saw at the Alamo, which is like one of those dinners you can like drink and get food served to you.
I will say I do like that. It's too expensive, but I like it.
No, dude, my fiance's got like the pass.
Mm.
So we have to go, you know, to make up the money.
Yeah.
So we see all the movies, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I saw that one. And there's this line in the movie where it's just like the main guy just looks at someone else and goes, "We're sea people now," which I laughed at and someone else laughed at. And But the guys behind us were like talking shit the whole time, which was a little annoying. And when they laughed at that, someone looks at him and goes, "Hey, shut the fuck up!" And they yelled back at them, and they got in a fight in the middle of the movie.
Oh, that's funny.
Which was worth the price of admission for me. But not the biggest fan, I gotta say. I did not. My buddy Rob, who's been on the show, is a huge fan of the Avatar movies. I know he'd be seething hearing me talking bad about it. I don't have a hard take on it, nothing. It just like was not, for me, a movie that I felt happy about seeing after I saw it.
To me, the first one was like those movies like Pacific Rim, where it's like a lot of big, cool machines flying
But that's
around.
What I wanted.
Yeah. But it doesn't deliver on that?
I went into it with that expectation. I was like, let me watch like a boobs and explosion movie. You know what I mean? Just like a loud movie with a lot of stuff. It was really tedious, man. It was extremely tedious. And like, I don't know. My take on Avatar is that like, I think it's cool to have a movie set in another world. I almost would prefer if they just like let that be it and let the humans not be a part of it. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, just like, let's just do like a movie on an alien world with like an alien, like biology and ecology and stuff. And let's explore that. That was the best part of Avatar, was like, oh, what's the world like there? You know what I mean? I want to know more about that world. The over the top colonialism, extractivism story was it was too basic for me to be interesting compared to just like, I want more of the whales. I thought the whales were cool. I was a whale fan. But
you know, I did see, have you seen Glass Onion?
I saw that last night. What's you got a take?
So, you know, Ben Shapiro, people were really reacting to that. And I've never known what is a good movie. There are movies I think are good. I've really,
you don't know what enjoyed, a good movie is, Matt.
The sort of platonic thing, like people are like, actually it's not. And I saw literally people doing the exact thing of Ben Shapiro. Like this was, and to me, it's like, I never know on certain genres of films, like if people who watch a lot of movies are going to be like, oh, this is a good one or this is a bad one. I will say with The Glass Onion, and I think like maybe the plot doesn't hold together or whatever, like but it does have one of the best scenes in any film of the year, which is the scene where, and this is spoilers, so stop if you haven't seen it yet, but where Daniel Craig is asking what the reward is for winning the murder mystery.
Yeah.
He keeps sort of butting in and say like, and the Elon Musk sort of guy that sort of like whose island it is and who's doing the murder mystery game is impatient with him. He's like, what do you mean? It's just like part of the process. You should just enjoy the process of the game, but whatever, we can do an iPad. And as soon as he says that, Daniel Craig's character immediately solves the game, like right in front of him, that this billionaire was expecting to take like, you know, the entire week. Mm-hmm. And how pissed the billionaire looks, played by Edward Norton, that he's just, his shit was immediately saw through by this guy. That whole progression was so funny to me. The only thing I put above that in films of this year, as far as funny scenes, and this is another spoiler for Barbarians, is, have you seen that?
No, what's that one?
Oh, shit. Maybe I shouldn't say this then. Barbarians is this it's this movie where this woman goes to like an Airbnb in...
Oh, yeah. You told me to watch it like six times. I'm not going to see it. Sorry, Matt. Because it's a horror, right? I'm
a
real pussy. I can't do that.
Oh, really? Okay, well, then I can spoil this then. There's a scene where... I forget what the actor's name is. I should know it, but... The guy who owns the Airbnb, like after this shit goes down in the first third of the movie, the guy who owns the Airbnb, like who's like some sort of like Silicon Valley, you know, player who is getting canceled for allegations, to put it shortly, comes back and he finds like there's all these tunnels, Justin Long, he finds all these tunnels underneath this property that he was just like owning an Airbnb and instead of being like, holy shit, this is a like sex dungeon sort of thing, he starts measuring it out to see how much more valuable the property is going to be, which is like, it's such a funny, I think satire that like, to me, and like, it was great to see the theaters because the entire like Brooklyn crowd, who probably half of whom are renting their shit out by Airbnb, like they really related to that joke.
Well, We didn't prep this. We have more stuff to get to. And again, like, I'm watching the chat, so feel free to jump in if people have questions or things they want to talk about. But I mean, so Barbarians, how you're not a big movie person generally, right? You don't see all the films. I'm just was going to ask you what your 2022 like top films were.
Yeah, that's the thing with me is like any big horror film I'll see. And that's kind of
I love that about you so much. I'm just really like I can't handle that genre at all.
I love it. I don't know what it is, but that and like and part of this is it's what me and my girlfriend agree on.
Yeah.
We don't really
That does change what films you see.
Yeah.
I see much less westerns now than I used to.
Right, exactly. Although the other problem with me is I don't watch anything alone. If I if I'm watching something, it's because I'm watching it with somebody. Because I don't have the attention span. I'll blast the audiobook at me and play NBA 2K if I'm alone.
Daredevil agrees with me on my Avatar take. I will say I think all of these things like set up a show or a movie or whatever in like an alternate universe and like just tell a story. I hate when they try to pull it back to our world. It's a pet peeve of mine. That's why I was never into Harry Potter as a kid. And I was a nerd enough to be into other stuff. I like it to be set, fantasy or not. Best films. I thought Triangle of Sadness was really good. Did you see that?
I didn't know.
Dude, I wouldn't say it's a great film, but it's a fun film. It's also like crack for me because Woody Harrelson plays a communist.
Oh, interesting.
Ship captain in it, which is super good. Yeah. My favorite film, and I know I've made this like my pet thing, but like The Northman, I thought was so damn good.
Oh, yeah.
And it pisses me off that got no love from folks.
Yeah, no, not really.
No, it got no. I mean, it bombed.
I do want to see it, but I haven't gotten around to it. That's another one. Like
you should see it. I think you would like it.
I would, but that's the problem. Is like I blew all of my girlfriend's.
Oh, you ruined all your boy movies on Barbarian.
Oh no, she loves that, but Viking shit. I made her watch three seasons of The Last Kingdom.
And I love that show, dude.
I know, but it's bleak and depressing.
Dude, I finally, we should probably remember we're doing a live show and get back to stuff. But I finally convinced the fiance to watch The Last Kingdom. So I'm okay, on my second, because the first time I watched it, she was just like, I'm not watching Viking bullshit with you. So I watched it on my own, which was great. But then I finally convinced her into it. So I'm on my second watch. Honestly, phenomenal. But The Northman is like a whole other level. And for TV, I think that White Lotus was excellent, which you should definitely watch if you haven't.
Big movie.
Did you see Prey?
I don't know. That sounds familiar. Which one was that again? Was that the Predator? Like
our friend, yes. Congressional baseball fan asked.
I thought Prey was okay. That was the one. Yeah, that was the one where it was the Comanches versus that was okay. Smile, I liked, another horror. Nope, another horror. I really liked Nope. I'm looking for any non-horrors that I enjoyed, and I just don't watch any of this shit. And especially like all this stuff, like the Fablemans or whatever, all this stuff coming out that's like clearly like meant to win Oscars.
No, yeah, that was a no for me immediately.
Yeah.
I haven't seen The Banshees of Inisherin. I'm going to watch that soon, but I don't know, man.
I watched See How They Run. That was pretty forgettable. I haven't seen Everything Everywhere All at Once, whatever.
Yeah, not my favorite.
Orphan First Kill, actually. That was fun.
I don't know what that is, but it just like it goes very much with the Matt Leck.
Yeah, what's funny about that is it sounds like just another one of these generic horror, but that's actually a really wild, like kind of wacky. Really? Yeah, it's very the plot is very funny in that. Like basically this chick, spoiler alerts, the main girl, she's this like, she has some congenital disease that makes her not age. And she looks for a family with a missing girl to like get her. And she says, I'm the girl. And, you know, tries and to be with that family or whatever. It's really convoluted. I don't want to give, people should watch that movie and tell me what they think about it.
Nice.
One Cut of the Dead. I tried to watch that I gotta say, kind of lot. It didn't pump. I thought the one cut thing seemed like a gimmick, and it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was a one cut film?
Yeah.
Oh, damn. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, mainly like at home, we watch, I have Criterion. So we watch like a lot of classics. Good Japanese films always sort of seem to be at the top of the list for me. You know which movie I watched that I was really late on? I know pissed a lot of people off for a long time.
What?
No Country for Old Men.
Oh, yeah. That's so good.
Which is a great film.
It's sort of, A+, that movie.
And then if you want like my like holiday family movie that I like a lot, is probably one of my favorite movies of all time. And I actually would challenge the audience here to let me know if there's another film that sort of scratches that itch. You got to get it right, though. It's got to be like Southern. Have you ever seen Smokey and the Bandit?
You know, I haven't. My dad loved that movie.
Honestly, it's like, I'm not going to go so far as to say it's a great film or anything like that, but it's a very fun one. It makes me happy. Jerry Reed is in it, and he does a lot of the music for it. You know the song Eastbound and Down is from that song, like Eastbound Down, going on, trucking. And it's about, what's his name? Reynolds is a bootlegger, and they bring Coors beer to Atlanta. And it always was weird to me. It's like, why are they bringing, like, was it a legal move beer? Back then, you could only get Coors in like Texas and Colorado and a couple other states because it didn't have preservatives in it. But people really like Coors. So they had to sneak it across state lines. And that's the premise of the movie. Again, it's not like a great film or anything like that, but it's just a good road tripping, like, road tripping one. But anyway, we can do movie night sometime. Oh, shit. Actually, Tommy has a good one. Do you see Bullet Train? I thought Bullet Train was awesome.
Oh, really? That's surprising.
Bullet Train was great. I thought it's a, you know, action movie, fast action, not super deep story, anything like that. I thought it was fun. I thought it was great. I saw it in theaters. This is the thing, too, is it's like there's so many movies that are just like, you got to see them in theaters. Like when someone tells me they saw The Northman at home, I don't think that works for me. Like you got to see that movie, preferably at a... I feel weird about promoting the Alamo Drafthouse so much on this stream. There's a big union fight happening here.
Oh, shit, yeah.
So whenever I go to there's only one on South Lamar here. Whenever I go there, I tip big and write union strong. But if they do ask for a boycott, obviously I will. I do like sitting, and there's nothing that makes me feel like more of a happy fat American than like sitting at a movie theater and you press a button and someone brings you beer,
a milkshake or some shit. It's amazing.
There's some movies that like it's just not gonna be good at home. Anyway, let's get to some of these things. Talking about before we get to more calls, if you're okay with this, Matt, we can get to the meal of the section. I have this Deseret News or Desert News. Do you think it's Deseret?
Deseret, yep.
Deseret, which I just learned is a was a state that the Mormons were hoping to build. But
Mormon nationalism.
Deseret News. I just think this is a fun post game thing, Matt. So bear with me a little bit. I'm gonna take us through this because I feel like ourselves and maybe some of our audience. Though you don't fight too much with your family when you get home, do you?
No, they all defer to me basically, or just keep quiet because I'll bulldoze them.
I have some family members who fight with me, but not so many at my Christmas or Thanksgiving dinner. This is a piece that I just found. Have you seen this, Matt, or is this your first go through?
I haven't looked through it. I saw the headline.
This is an excellent piece. I love this genre of like boomer writer. Like, how do I deal with the fact that like my daughter or children or whatever are like pushing back on my politics? So this was from last year. Perspective: The Socialist at the Dinner Table. How to survive a holiday gathering when your daughter invites Karl Marx to the party. Now, I'll just say, you know, in terms of like our audience and stuff, I think, you know, it's important to recognize there's a limit when you're spending time with family. Like, don't turn your whole life into like a sermon and trying to convert the unconverted. But this is exceptional. I mean, like, again, I have family members who are a little bit more right wing, and usually I try to chill. I usually don't jump in until they just start saying too much. but also, like, you know, dinner, everyone's family's different. Sometimes dinner table conversations can be really important for folks.
No, that's my thing is like, you, I think you hold it until something is said where your silence is a message in its own. Like the most, I don't want to get too specific, but I got in a discussion about admissions preferences for North Dakota schools and allowing Indigenous folks, for instance. I'm like, I'm just not gonna let like the younger generations of our family like hear that sort of like, "Woe is us. We would be in this fucking blank school if it weren't for these folks." Like, motherfucker, we literally have family lore that's about, hey, look at this land Abe Lincoln and all his friends gave us 150 years ago just for the, you know, you know, being white and European, right? Like we fucking know this shit. And like that's probably the biggest one I've ever gotten into. And
I like this from Paul Flowers. It says, family with, in terms of family discussions, hold your tongue till you can't hold it no more. I think it's like probably like the way to go with these kind of things. Yeah. All right. So we're going to go through this. We're going to do a live reading. I've read this a couple times. It's actually a personal favorite of mine. It's a great essay. Matt will be going to this new, but just before we get into it, just since it's post game, we can meander as long as we want. It reminds me, you'll see when we finish the piece, from a sort of opposite direction, but like I was really lucky when I went to school. One of my philosophy professors was this super radical Marxist, and like again, like first from my family go to college, I had no idea what kind of school I was going to when I went there. I loved him a lot; he taught me a lot. But he was always complaining about how people would always suggest the movie Office Space to him. Which, just for the record, I love Office Space. I think Office Space is a great film. Filmed here in Austin, you know, like it's a good movie. But again, like people are like, oh, it's sort of anti-capitalism, so you're going to love this, to my professor. And he always laughed, spoiler alert, but I'm sorry. If you haven't seen it, you can watch it, and this won't ruin anything for you either. But like the end is like the liberation is that like the main, what's that actor's name? I can't remember his name right now. Anyway, he like stops working the office job and becomes a construction worker. Because he can work outside, and that's like the liberation for him. And he's like, well, this isn't really escaping alienation. I bring that up just, it'll become clear as the piece goes on, but just like, it is sometimes funny where people sort of put the Marxist, the communist, the socialist criticism of capitalism is that like, we're against like a certain kind of work. We're against sort of like bourgeois, like middle-class life, instead of like the fundamental exploitation. That's what we're worked up about.
Right.
Anyway, let's get into this a little bit, Matt, and I'll do a dramatic reading for us. For a long time, I thought the biggest and most troubling differences between my eldest daughter and me was how we feel about horses.
Already, like, what the fuck?
Wrong start.
Okay, sure.
I've been obsessed with them since childhood. She asked, do I have to, when offered riding license? But we worked it out, meaning she doesn't ride and never will, and I'm over it. A mother's love overcomes most everything, especially if it saves her some money. Lately, there's an even more distressing divide between us. My daughter, now 27, doesn't like capitalism. These days, she prefers socialism. This is a shocking development in my parenting career.
How old is your daughter?
27, so 28 now. This is in 2021. So she's sort of in it, by the way. This isn't even like classic, like kid comes home, you know. She came home at the start of the pandemic, toting among her other possessions the Marx Engels reader. So hell yeah to the daughter, by the way. For Christmas last year, she gave everyone in the family a copy of the Communist Manifesto.
Now that's bold.
I do love it.
I don't think I would do that. I don't quite know, but I think I appreciate it, and good for you.
ordered from Amazon, a Monopoly company, with unintentional irony.
I mean, Mark's giving you chapters on Jeff Bezos, if you wanted, Mom.
Everyone was excited but me. They would have all cracked them open and started reading right there under the Christmas tree had I not distracted them by presenting everyone else with holiday gnome socks. So we know what kind of family this is. No offense to holiday gnome sock families.
No, I mean, that's a microcosm of sort of the West capitalist and intelligence services yeah. investment.
I'm assuming this is in Utah. Just saying, but I could be wrong about that. Everyone was excited. Okay, she gave everyone holiday gnome socks to deflect the radicalism. I have no idea what became of the other three copies once the gifts were organized and put away. My manifesto sits now on the bookshelf, smirking at me. Even unread, I feel like it's winning. Although it's an anathema to me, I can't get rid of it any more than I can get rid of my children's kindergarten artwork. So if a little sweetness.
Yeah. If you think an inanimate object is smirking at you, I would say talk to a therapist about that.
Well, I was also saying I love the power that the yeah. manifesto. Very element. And, I mean, I think people should read. I mean, honestly, if you're listening to this, you haven't read it, read it. It's a 45-minute read. It's like quick as hell. It's not capital. It's not dense. It's not complicated. Right. You know, you can do it in an afternoon. I love that it's just sitting there and like sort of teasing this person. But I will say, as someone who does appreciate like the family, like it's nice that, you know, it has like a hold over her because she can't get rid of it, even though it's her nemesis or whatever.
It reminds me of the first time I was at a party at this guy's house or apartment in Fargo, and I saw, not sure what it was. It was some Marx or Engels. I don't think it was Capital. It was some sort of collection. And I remember being kind of like impressed, but I hadn't done any reading at all to like actually know. But I'm just like, oh, that's vaguely like, you know, leftist and radical. That's cool. Mm-hmm. And then I found out later that they were Ron Paul guys. But
recently, another daughter, a freshman in college, came home and said, no one likes capitalism anymore. Yeah. She says this in a house paid for by capitalism, filled with things bought by a capitalist. Between you and me, it hurts. But I go ahead and open the conversation. Under capitalism is every man for himself, she says, when I try to engage her. Capitalism dehumanizes everyone because money is more important than human beings. It legit comes down to human greed. Let's just finish this and we can, because I know you and I are both burning with criticisms here. I point out gently that her transactions with her favorite restaurant down the street, a sushi spot run by a local family, represent capitalism in its simplest form. Voluntary exchanges between individuals that improve the lives of each party. For this, she has an answer that is a one-size-fits-all rebuke to every argument in favor of capitalism. Jeff Bezos. Kids got a point. Well, I would say this with love to the daughter and to the mother, that no, I mean, Jeff Bezos obviously represents a hyper-consolidation of capitalism. But the criticism of capitalism is much deeper than just the fact that there's like monopoly capitalists or like certain people are able to rig the game. It's that that sushi spot down the road, right? Despite the fact that, you know, the author here says is run by a local family, is not worked by a local family. For each bit that's sold, somebody works to produce the rice, to produce the fish, to produce the seaweed, and then to wrap it all up nice together and sell it to you and then provide it by a waiter who's, you know, dealing with your family and your demands and all that kind of stuff. A lot of labor goes into that product. And the criticism of capitalism is not that that's happening. It's that the production is happening. It's that the value that is created by all those workers who are creating, providing, and serving that product to you are not paid the full wage, the full value of the labor that they're producing. That's the criticism.
Exactly.
And this will become clear that this criticism is not very well understood by the author as we go further in the piece. But it's so funny.
Go to that sushi restaurant, the thing is, the problem we have with that is that, the business-owning family, no matter how great they are, has a set of conditions that they can rely upon, which is that people are going to need to work for them or starve. Right. This is the thing we saw with Joe Rogan saying he's against basic income now because people don't want to work at the restaurants. Yeah. Right. And what that's saying is people need to be deprived of money so that they get their ass out to go serve your sushi. And to me, I would rather have those workers empowered through something like a union and more be more empowered in their workplace so that I don't have to worry my sushi is being delivered to me by somebody who has a whole bunch of other shit that they'd rather be attending to, but they need dollars to lubricate their fucking life. So that's why they're spending time with me. That's not what I like in restaurants. I do like the things that you like too, which is a great chef making nice food and, friendly staff asking if you want a refill. That's fine. Yeah.
I want that under socialism.
Exactly.
And as our friend, congressional baseball fan, that's his tendency puts it very well. He says, this is basic confusion between capitalism as a system and local commerce. Totally. I mean, that's the point. It's again, we'll get into this more as this piece goes on, but there's a big difference between thinking the socialists are against labor and production, which they're not. That's more of a ultra leftist or maybe
Rad lib, maybe
anarchism, whatever. criticism of these kind of things. Then the one that I would make. I mean, I'm somebody who gets really disappointed that we've gone in the past 5 years from luxury communism to degrowth and to anti-restaurant shit on the left. Instead of the argument is no, we think people should be paid and taken care of who provide that service, and it also should be something that we can all afford on the wages that we work. Our friend here too, McCorkran.
M. Corcoran.
M. Corcoran. Thank you, Matt, for figuring that one out for me. Says some people think you can't have luxury items in a social society. Crazy enough, you would still be able to eat and enjoy things. You might even have time and resources to do it, and I totally agree with that. But let's get back to this.
I could be, on that note. And this might be exposing my ignorance. The production of Cuban cigars, did that move off, or do you know the story of this? Because that would seem to half the fucking guys my dad's business associates would love Cuban cigars.
Castro banned them. They don't make them anymore.
Okay, I assume that was. Where do they make them?
I'm just kidding.
Oh, really? Okay. That's what I literally don't know. It seems like a contradiction there.
Yeah. No. These things. Yeah.
I thought maybe they were made
again. Just be very, very, very elementary clear. Socialism critique of capitalism is not that capitalism produces things. It's the way that it's produced and who enjoys the proceeds of that production.
That's so funny. The idea, Jordan Peterson, your room's messy because and you're just mad at the people who made all this stuff. If you made less stuff, then my fucking room wouldn't be so dirty.
This is a Sunday morning grapefruit and coffee read. So I think we can actually just go through it if that's okay with you, Matt.
Let's do it.
So local commerce, we talk about why that's wild. To be fair, my mother and I.
Just want to double back to under capitalism, it's every man for himself. That goes back to that is a condition that serves the capitalists. When they say, millions of Americans only don't have $400 for a emergency, that means your ass is going to be showing up to work on time because you can't lose those shifts.
So I'm just going to say something to be a little clear on this. A lot of socialists do not do themselves favors on this, this criticism, in my opinion, from what I've seen. Because I think a lot of people write, this is why I think that I don't think you need to do these things in an exclusive way or anything like that. But this is why understanding these systems, understanding the criticism, understanding the text is really important because I think people come into it with the right convictions But they respond to these arguments as legitimate. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they think, oh, big business is the problem instead of like small business is good. And you see this all the time.
Right, right, right.
You know, oh, small businesses. No, also like, I'm sorry, friends. If you've ever worked for a small business, you know small business is just as nasty as any big corporation. And in fact, sometimes small businesses can be worse in terms of like their tyranny because everyone's a family. You know the owner, all that kind of bullshit.
Right.
Anyway, we'll have more opportunities to talk about this stuff, Matt, as we go through. So it gets good. To be fair, my mother and I haven't agreed on nearly anything since I turned 16. We belong to different political parties and different religious denominations. She prefers Estée Lauder, while I like Clinique. Still, Jesus, we never...
We need to raise fucking taxes. Jesus
Christ. I will be honest, not to... out myself as too much of a redneck. I have no idea who either of those. What
Estee Lauder? Those are fashion labels or something.
Okay, thanks, Matt.
for my very imprecise answer.
I like that. I mean, honestly, knowing both of us, like I'm surprised that I'm the ignorant one on that. Still, not that Matt doesn't have beautiful fashion. Still, we never once had a disagreement about whether the underpinnings of the nation's economic system were moral and sound. Unlike my children, I have not once uttered the phrase, eat the rich. Well, maybe you should. There is much to be admired about the zeal of youth, the determination of every generation to overthrow the assorted idiocies of their parents and improve their own lot. The baby boomers have been there and done that. In fact, the baby boomers practically invented the teenage rebellion.
No, that is not accurate. Fucking A. God, that is such like a, that's the problem with boomers, right? Like they think that this shit is all new to them. And like, No, that's youth revolt is like fucking biblical. Like, what are you talking about? I mean, I don't know. I couldn't cite you a Bible source, but I assume it is somewhere in the Bible you could find it.
Well, yeah. They too were rebels with causes, civil rights, Vietnam, and free speech. Moreover, the anti-capitalist impulse is nothing new. It's just as likely to be inspired as by Henry David Thoreau as by Karl Marx. Do you like this?
You're
the English friend.
I don't know that I don't know about that Thoreau stuff. I'd have to. It's been a while.
Thoreau, civil disobedience.
I want to go back one sentence. They too were rebels with causes, civil rights. America dealing with racism that was caused by chattel slavery that basically birthed the modern capitalism, or at least supplied a good chunk of solid profit for it. Vietnam, anti-communist war of aggression to maintain empire, particularly for the pro-capitalist West. And free speech, what she means there is specifically sort of like anti-Soviet, which I get, like, I don't like applaud the speech codes of like the Soviet Union. I prefer like more open speech to that, but that's more anti-communism there. So the first two things, something that we did because of, we had to do because of capitalism. Another thing we had to do because of capitalism, and then anti-communism.
Dude, and like, I think, you know, Hitchens, I'm going to paraphrase it, but Christopher Hitchens always had this good line on, the 68ers or like that generation, was like, it's been amazing for him to see how much that has been commodified, where like this very anti-capitalist movement has now sort of been remembered by like flower power and all of this, like all the radical slogans and positions sort of taken out of it. And sort of replaced with something that you could sell at a Abercrombie or, Forever 21. Kowalski, with the ancient Greek, says, this is a quote from Socrates, says, children, they have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect for elders and love chatter in place of exercise. They no longer rise when elders enter the room. They contradict their parents and tyrannize their teachers. Children are now tyrants, which I do think is a good bit here.
That is very funny. And Thoreau, I will say one thing funny about him is he did start a massive forest fire. What were we going to say, David?
No, I was going to say Thoreau, like, there's a part of it that, like, I always say that I think it's good when we can remember that these kind of anti-capitalist tendencies aren't foreign-born importations. But
Thoreau
might
not
be the person I would start with.
I don't know. Yeah,
Thoreau's all about like, I went back to the land I was taken care of. I think Thoreau comes back as this piece goes on. Here's a Google ad for me. LBJ, which might show what I look at on the computer sometimes. Oh yeah, we do get more Thoreau. Thoreau was the age of my oldest daughter when he first went to Walden Pond to live by a 10 by 15 foot hut. He too decried the hamster wheel of capitalist work week, believing that people should order their lives so that they work one day each week and take six off. His first foray into transcendentalism began with him moving into the spacious house of a friend, Ralph Waldo Emerson, and ended with him moving back in with his mom and dad, who'd been chugging along on the capitalist train, making the finest pencils in New England while their boy was thinking deep thoughts in the woods. The pencil trade would eventually provide Thoreau with the funds to self-publish his book. Let me just get through this really quick. Truth is, most of us eventually turn out alarmingly like our parents, which is why the progressive... Wait, let's keep on the throw, because this is actually the meat here. Yeah, exactly. The criticism of capitalism is not about work. I don't know how many times I have to say that. It's not about people work and produce things. It's about the way that things are produced. It's about the social relations around that work. That is the problem. That is what the criticism is. And look, yes, she is actually 100% right, I think, that there's a general tendency in like humanity that kids rebel against their parents and they, you know, criticize the world as it is, right? Because of that tendency. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of that is not very like scientific or political. It's just like, I don't want to be like, you know, I don't want to, daddy, as the Trump saying goes. But again, if you went back and you read the book that your daughter gave you, the Communist Manifesto was not, I don't want to work. I don't want to do anything. I want to sit at home and I just want to, and I don't ever want to go to a restaurant before. It was working people produce the vast majority of value in society. Working people are exploited. Working people should take the power that they have because they are the people who provide the wealth and the power and the ingenuity of society. And they should take that so that they can take society under their own control so that the benefits of the labor that they produce goes to them instead of the fucking assholes who sit around and enjoy the rents on their investments.
Yeah, here's a little bit of time. This is from article Thoreau and the Guiding Myth of Capitalism. A chapter entitled Baker Farm. Thoreau begins by recounting an exchange he once had with one of his neighbors, John Field, as he was making his way to Walden Pond to go fishing. John Field tells Thoreau how hard he worked for a neighboring farmer, turning up a meadow with a spade or a bog hoe at the rate of $10 an acre and the use of the land with manure for a year. And Thoreau recounts John Field's little broad-faced son worked cheerfully for the father's side, not knowing how poor a bargain the latter had made. Thoreau said, it seems a little bit like, I don't want to say too much because it's been a while since I've been deep in Thoreau, but I feel like naive capitalism is more closer to the transcendentalist's view of these things. Like, I mean, look, I love having a tax protest against war. Mm-hmm. That's cool, being a pacifist and all, but ultimately, like, I think there's a little bit more to politics than that.
So just really quick, if you all don't mind, can post-game fucking around? I did not prep this, by the way. This came out. Chapter 3 in the Communist Manifesto, the book she refuses to read, Marx talks about these different forms of socialism that had been popular. Of course, and if you remember something about Thoreau was a contemporary of Marx in the sense that they lived through the same time, but Thoreau's waning years were Marx's active years. We have this petty bourgeois socialism. The feudal aristocracy was not the only class that was ruined by the bourgeoisie, not the only class whose conditions of existence pined and perished in the atmosphere of modern bourgeois society. The medieval burgess and the small peasant proprietors were the precursors of the modern bourgeoisie. In those countries which are built, which are but little developed industrially and commercially, these two classes still vegetate side by side with the rising bourgeoisie. In countries where modern civilization has become fully developed, a new class of petty bourgeoisie has been formed, fluctuating between proletariat and bourgeoisie, and ever renewing itself as supplementary part of bourgeois society. The individual members of this class, however, are being constantly hurled down by the proletariat by the action of competition, and as modern industry develops, they even see the moment approaching when they will completely disappear as an independent section of modern society to be replaced in manufacturers, agriculture, and commerce by overlookers, bailiffs, and shopmen. There's a historical contingent to the pain that Thoreau was writing about when he said, we should just go live in, off in the woods, hang out, fuck around a little bit. And we're not able to do that anymore under capitalist society. So again, I'm not trying to be like hyper anti-Thoreau. Thoreau's not like my boy or anything like that. But the point is that these criticisms of capitalism were actually identified by Mr. Karl Marx in the book that is sitting on this person's bookshelf, and they're refusing to engage with them. Yeah. It's pretty funny to me.
You know, I will say one thing in defense of Thoreau and Emerson. This is from an article by Gilman Ostrander. This is from 53, so, you know, it's not most updated. But Emerson and Thoreau, Emerson, speaking at Thoreau's funeral, mentioned John Brown as one of the men who had most influenced Thoreau in his last years. Whatever their second thoughts may have been, both men immediately following the Harper's Ferry raid took a vigorous part in the defense of Brown, and by their eloquent assertions of his saintliness, undoubtedly contributed much to the making of Brown's legend. So, look, Mom, if that's a lesson you want your daughter to learn, is that, hey, that those guys were supporters of John Brown, then fair enough. We'll leave the marks on the shelf.
All right. Fair enough. But just since we're doing text battles, Matt, let's scroll down a little bit on the Communist Manifesto to the critical utopian socialism and communism. The significance of critical utopian socialism and communism bears an inverse relation to historical development, which I think is more fair to the Thoreauian criticism, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Right. I mean, modern society has pulled us this way. We're not able to.
Brook Farm was literally a utopian socialist commune that the transcendentalists participated in.
In proportion as the modern class struggle develops and takes definite shape, which was happening during Thoreau's life, this fantastic standing apart from the contest, these fantastic attacks on it, lose all practical value and all theoretical justification. Therefore, although the originators of these systems were in many respects revolutionary, their disciples have in every case formed more mere reactionary sects. They hold fast to the views of their master in opposition to the progressive historical development of the proletariat. They therefore endeavor in that consistently to deaden the class struggle and to reconcile the class antagonisms. They still dream of experimental realization of their social utopias, of founding isolated, I will not be able to say this word, phalansteres. Of establishing home colonies or setting up little Akiria. And to realize all these castles in the air, they are compelled to appeal to the feelings and the purses of the bourgeoisie. Exactly the criticism she makes, right? They are compelled to appeal to the feelings and the purses of the bourgeoisie. By degrees, they sink into the category of the reactionary or conservative socialists depicted above, differing from these only by more systemic pedantry and by their fanatical and superstitious belief in the miraculous effects of their social science. So,
doesn't miss.
That's that. Yeah, and you're right. Honestly, Communist Manifesto slaps, and it does frustrate me a little bit that it's not as well read. Anyway, I think that's the path we just took is taking this even more seriously, because this next section, Matt, is why I love this essay. This is why it's a personal favorite of mine. It cracks me up every time I read it, because she does the very classic Marx failed to consider, right? Truth is, most of us eventually turn out alarmingly like our parents, which is why the progressive insurance Dr. Rick advertising campaign is so funny. In the commercial, Dr. Rick coaches young people on how not to do things like their parents, like texting with one finger or planning to leave a football game in the third quarter. Do we really need a sign that tells us to live, laugh, and love? He asks, taking a wall sign from a young woman putting in the trash. The company's chief marketing officer, Jeff Charney, told the Washington Post that he built the campaign around a psychological concept called introjection, which is the human tendency to adopt the ideas and values of people around us. Psychologists used to believe that their kids started becoming more like their parents when they have children, but now they think it starts when they buy their first house, which is a very universal experience in the United States of America, right?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like they're starting, they're on the right track.
Which is something my kids have yet to do because of you. No, Jeff Bezos.
Wait, while what? I wait. What does she mean by that?
So she, I guess because Jeff Bezos is too rich. I don't know.
She's a capitalist. What the fuck are you talking about?
It seems she has a very, yeah, exactly. She has a very underdeveloped theory of capitalism compared to her children, which is pretty funny.
God. I mean, yeah, what are you talking about?
Read the manifesto, if anything, just to criticize it a little bit better. While I wait, I may not be able to talk to my children out of socialism, but I know how to make a deal. I'll tell my daughters that I will read every word of the Communist Manifesto twice if they will read Milton Friedman's Capitalism and Freedom. If all else fails, I'll take them shopping.
Take that bet.
I will say, bad deal, just in the sense that the Communist Manifesto is a lot shorter.
Right.
Than Capitalism and Freedom, but
more than twice, I would think.
Pretty good. I think this is just like, this like represents a form of like kind of like shitty.
This should have been 2016. This is behind. It's like behind, they need to formulate time. Their thoughts a little bit better than this. Like,
they should.
What's that faffing about? Yeah, those insurance commercials.
Well, that's the thing that I love. It's like the counter argument to all of this is sushi restaurant good, Jeff Bezos bad, and have you seen the Progressive insurance commercial?
Because you'll be just like us. Like, that's not how things really work out. I mean, look at feudalism. The people legitimately thought like there was divine right of kings, and you wouldn't speak like people were psycho. And then in a few generations, we're like, yeah, that was fucking nuts that we were doing that. Capitalism is going to need a little bit better than this Deseret News Mom.
I think so. Well, all right, let's get to the last few calls. But before that, we'll really quickly read through the discourse. There's only two, both from our friend Joe Snuffy in Rhode Island. Just inviting folks to, if you do have questions or anything you might want to hear Matt and I respond to, and you're on the Twitch, drop it in the chat, and we will do our best. I'm getting a second wind, even though I do think I'm coming down from COVID. I hope it's just a cold, but you never know. That's the thing that sucks right now, man. It's like
a lot of shit.
You always used to get sick this time of year, but now it's like, fuck, do I have COVID? Anyway, Joe says, I've always found the first Avatar missed the mark. Because the problems with the human resource extraction was its corporate nature. In the setting, humanity cannot survive just off Earth, and that world had resources we needed but could only get from there. If anyone thinks a social society wouldn't extract those resources, they're lying to themselves. And then Joe also says, I have the problem that my dad thinks anything I say politically is Marxist or communist. So I've all actually turn this into a game where I exclusively advocate for policies of past Republican presidents when I'm around them. Apparently Nixon, Reagan, Eisenhower, and Lincoln were all communists. Love my dad, but he was an adult when most of these policies were considered conservative Republican platform pillars. It's weird how he can't see that. I mean, it's funny. I mean, like, think about, like, you know, W.
Yeah.
He tried to return to a much more moderate position towards the border and was fleeced for that, which is just goes to show how different things have become in our life.
If you can't have a border, you can't have a country. That's what I'm always saying. Speaking of Joe Snuffy.
Hey, everybody. It's Joe Snuffy. So I just wanted
Triple
to
crown.
Give a shout out and call and wish everybody a happy new year. This was a interesting year where you know, compared to the last few, I feel like in this year we actually had a couple of ups. So, you know, it's disappointing that we didn't get a lot of the good things that could have been. But, hey, you know, it could have been worse. And that's we had the last few years, that's saying something. So everybody keep up the good work. Oh, and I think I've got it as to, like, what the health, like, nutraceutical supplement that you guys could go in on. Now, you both have, you know, long flowing locks of hair and whatnot. So I think some kind of, like, a hair growth tonic or something, I think that would be right up your alley, and you could probably get some some investors in it because, I mean, hey, if you look at the likes of like a Tim Pool or an Elon Musk or, you know, any of these other guys that will themselves into baldness at the age of 15, they've got money backing them. So, you know, you can make a pitch. All right. Everybody have a good night.
Thank you, Joe.
Congressional baseball fan says we need a rally to restore sanity again. You want to know the most embarrassing thing about me? Even more embarrassing that I was a Republican in high school was I went to that in D.C.
You and my buddy Chris, all my Texas friends were wild for the rally. Well, come on, guys, we got it. Listen to this, John Stewart. This is John Stewart. He's telling everyone to get along.
I don't know. I don't know, man. It's pretty fucking funny. I don't know what was going through my head at that point.
That was, I mean, it's wild. That whole thing, like.
So bad. So yeah. Bad. Like, looking back at it, it's like the politics of it were just awful. Just no, I awful. Mean,
the worst signs of any maybe march of all time. Like, like, down with this sort of thing, that sort of. Like,
damn, Daredevil was there too. Says they went to it, couldn't see the stages or anything, just went around DC, then hit up the museums.
Nice.
I know. I'm just saying, like, that's why I'm always like, you know, we can come from being cringe to something else.
That's well, I think Chrisman always says that's the only path forward is through the cringe.
Howdy, Left Reckoning, and Merry Christmas, David. It is wonderful to see that you survived the brisk, cool air. I was very concerned for you. I just wanted to wish you all, you know, a happy new year. Show some appreciation for the great shows that you've had this year. I wish you nothing more than success and, you know, happiness in the year to come. For me personally, I hope it's not quite as eventful, but if it is, I hope you guys get a lot of clicks out of it. Also, I'm just kind of curious, how was your guys' Christmas? What did you guys have for, you know, your holiday meal? My family does prime rib. Did you get anything cool for Christmas? I got, like, this new PC monitor, which was pretty awesome. Nice. Unfortunately, my wish list to Santa didn't go well. I did not get the goth farm girl of my dreams, so that was a little disappointing. But other than that, it was pretty cool. So, yeah, have a very happy new year, and thanks for all of the wonderful programs that you guys have done.
I mean, hey, if any ladies in the audience, there's an opening in Nebraska.
I had a good time. Did lamb for Christmas. Nothing on the smoker. I did a big ass Thanksgiving, so I was done for this one. But I had some good lamb, some nice wine, chilled out. Did I get anything good? Oh man, honestly, I want to get up and grab them, but my fiance got me an awesome, I think, a gift that sort of encapsulates me as a character. She got me a kubide, which is like Persian kebab. Skewers. So you kubide is amazing if you've never had it before, and it's not fucking bullshit Turkish crap. I get so mad when people talk about kebab and they're always talking about Turkish shit, the shish kebab, which, just saying, I don't understand why shish kebab is so popular in America.
It's easy.
I don't know.
Anyway, I mean, you could do it either.
I'm shitting too hard on it. I know there's good, like, there's the real stuff and there's like the white guy version of it. But it's just funny when certain things like sort of catch on in America. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, why did shish? It's not, we have a big Turkish population in the U.S. now, like, nationally.
But it's just a, it's just like shish kebab, like that. That's appealing to anybody, even if you can't cook. If you have a grill, you just chop stuff up and put it on a stick. Like,
well, anyway, just like I've inherited some Persian nationalism on this kind of stuff. Like, Kuba Day is amazing, and you bake, you make a kebab. It's like a mix of like beef or lamb and spices and onions stuff, but you put it on a, not like a stick, on a sword, right? Which is awesome.
Very badass.
So she got me like a nice set of Kuba Day skewers, but it came in a camo carrying case, which I feel like for me, it's like, that's exactly right. It's just like a little bit cosmopolitan, a little bit redneck. So very happy with that gift.
We have one question here from Puddle Dive. Address real quick. Sometimes I think the left expends too much energy responding to the right in defense of basic facts relating to COVID, et cetera. Not enough time setting forth our own critiques of the establishment. What do you guys think? I mean, I think one of the biggest travesties of that is, yeah, there's no air to toward what should be the common sense response to the pandemic, which is getting off of our patchwork healthcare system into a more national system that's fully funded. And so people can, whatever their, you know, like say like long COVID or things like that, people will consider like, well, I'll be able to go to a, talk to a doctor through this stuff, or the vaccines, that IP, like we had, it seemed like there was a time where that was a discussion, like, but that's even, that's again, like behind all of the culture war of COVID, like none of those things are actually talked about. And like even if you were just interested in hitting Democrats, like you never talk about how they literally decided to expand COBRA, which is a overly convoluted giveaway to health, private health insurances, instead of just expanding Medicare and Medicaid. And it's psychotic that we went through and lost a million people, and we don't even think about, is this the best way to do this, to like make sure people have access to healthcare? That's not even a conversation. Like it could, the Medicare for All conversation seems as dead as it's been in like half decade.
Oh yeah. It feels very dead. No, I think that's it. I agree with your response completely. Helicopter Money recipient says, since y'all got adult film stars as guests, I got to ask you both, what would your porn star names be?
Well, my last name is already kind of...
Yeah, you could do something with
next
that.
Next name. Maybe just be like Max Leck or something like that. I
mean, my last name is Griscom, so I think you could go do something with that. But I'd probably be lame and do something cowboy. I think that's just like, that's easy for me or anything like that, right? Yeah. Kowalski. Kowalski says, on the rally to restore sanity, that was the first internet live stream I ever watched from the cab of a tractor.
Wow.
And adding to that, Daredevil has a pitch for our friend Kowalski. Says, Kowalski is a handsome, smart, and hard worker and pretty cool. Lady, he's a winner 100%. And I would vouch for that that perspective all the way through. Yeah. Dark, I mean... It's so funny, like, to even think about going up there, because, like, I was, like, living off food stamp, poor white trash kid driving up to D.C. with my buddy, thinking we were doing something. I don't know.
Sanity, yeah.
I have no argument for why that was a good call. I just think it's very funny. I mean, you know, 17, funny as hell.
Hey, participate.
Some Timmy Fireball says, how could we be coerced to work without our healthcare being explicitly tied to our employers? Yeah. And I think that that's like, in fairness, like Bernie made that point. I think AOC made that point. Like people made that point, just never caught on. And that's like both like its efficacy as like an argument, I think. And more importantly, the fact the media has no interest in picking that argument up.
No.
And just a reminder, folks, Kowalski will be in Manhattan, an eligible bachelor with some land which is very nice. And he'll be in New York City in 4 weeks for our live show on January 22nd at the Cutting Room Floor. Thanks for the plug, friend. Do we have more calls? Or?
That's it.
Well, everybody, I appreciate y'all so much. It was fun as hell. 2022 was a fucking ride. Looking back, I mean, a real year of a lot of nothing. apart from some very exciting like labor movements and crypto scams and
sort of like
we expected.
It's like the surface is sort of like the same sort of mire that it has been for a while, but there's some like undercurrents that may be a little bit more interesting that hopefully those develop into, streams and whirlpools going forward.
Just last bit. Timmy says, does anyone get terrified when Kowalski calls in? I feel like someday he's going to call in and tell us we are all going to starve to death next year.
He does. Well, it's over. not even really use in trying at this point.
And Kowalski says, have a happy new year and I wish for peace on earth. I do too. This is a lot of fun. I appreciate everyone so much. Please consider, if you're watching the free version, subscribing at patreon.com/leftreckoning. We definitely want to continue to expand and grow this show more than we have so far, but it's been a really wonderful ride.
New year, new month, so I'll do as Michael says, make sure your cards are updated.
That's a good point. Yes, I do appreciate that. So we do, as Michael said, we always get a big, the word he used was always drop off. So it's always good if you could check that.
After the first of the month.
As you're getting I feel like I get a new credit card once a month now. Not like new accounts, like my credit card gets replaced.
David's been really extending this credit.
I've been living well. No. Also, works, my side hustle has been drying up. So please subscribe to the patreon.com/leftreckoning because I could definitely use some help. We'll be in New York January 22nd at the Cutting Room Floor. I think I might be coming down with COVID, y'all. Just bad news. But if I'm wake up tomorrow and I don't feel bad, I will do one last Griscom stream of 2022. So keep your eye out for that. Matt and I will be back with Left Reckoning 99 next week. And until then, everybody, take care and have a happy holiday and happy new year.
Peace.